do I get to that next chapter? That's what we've been able to solve for most recently. It's either through buying practices or inorganic growth.
Like you said, Garrett, like there are these places, these pockets where we're going to be able to help you grow your book of business better than you probably can do it on your own.
They're receiving clients of mine. That's why we talk about you don't need to be a salesperson here. As this funnel keeps going, there's a handoff, right?
I'm Garrett Lale. Welcome to the Advisor Advocates Podcast, bringing the latest industry trends and best practices to financial advisors from leaders of the top firms in the financial services industry.
Welcome back to the Advisor Advocates Podcast. I'm Garrett Lale, and joining me again today, Ed Meek, founder and CEO of Edge Financial Advisors in Wheaton, Illinois, and James Alexander. James, thanks for joining. We missed you last time. Me and Ed did one solo last time. We really missed you, man.
I know. I felt left out, but it sounded like it was a good one. So good to be here.
Yeah. I think it was the best, highest quality one now that he wasn't on that one. So
sounds right.
Sounds about right, yeah. Well, good to have you guys here. So we're going to kind of piggyback off of the last episode we did a little bit. The last show, kind of Ed and I were talking about the marketing efforts you've done with the podcast and just different, you know, best practices that you've kind of developed along the way to help get Edge's story out there and share the personalities behind the firm, I think, as much as anything else with the podcast, which I love. But also, successful marketing kind of leads to, you create a solution, and then sometimes with it comes a couple of problems beyond that, right? So once you have successful marketing, that starts to create other opportunities for you to have other solutions you need to seek in your business. And for you, it has been, as you've had more clients, you run out of capacity to serve those clients, and now we have to add other advisors to the team. And then as that starts to grow and snowball a little bit, you create opportunities for mergers and acquisitions, which I know you've also had a couple of. And we were just talking before we started recording this that, you know, when you're a $50 million book of business, adding another, you know, $1, $2, $3 million makes a pretty big dent in your growth goals. But when you're a $300 million firm, even a $3 million account is only a 1% lift in your assets and your revenue. So you have to start looking at other ways to move the needle. So excited to talk a little bit more about what you guys have done. I know you've had some really good success stories on that side of the business. So excited to see what we can learn from you today.
Yeah, we're excited to talk to you about it. If you recall, you know, when we talked last around the marketing, I had mentioned that we kind of had, I came up with these various spokes, and James helped me with that. And that's how are we going to grow? And it was like 7 years ago or so when it was my company. I had one partner. He helped me with the clients we had. And then we had a couple support staff. And I could have kind of rode off into the sunset, continuing to do that for how much ever longer I wanted to do it. It didn't seem appealing to me, even though I really like still helping clients. What was really exciting was growing the company, because I felt like everything we do is, we do a great job of this financial planning, and we had the investment management down. And so I took a step back and said, all right, well, how am I going to go about doing this? And, you know, if, as you recall, I had said, one, I want to bring in other advisors who this might be the right landing place for, because we have those things in place. But also what would make it appealing is helping them with marketing so they could grow their book of business. And then the other layer would be bringing in other clients, because, you know, I don't know what the exact number is, but it's right around age 60. The average advisor is around age 60. And that means there's a lot of 65, 70, and 75-year-old advisors out there, Garrett. You know this very well. And they eventually want to get out, and their clients are worth money. If they've been doing a good job with their clients, they're worth a lot of money. So I always thought I was kind of an M&A business, because I always said, oh, yeah, I'm interested in buying, but I didn't have anybody actively looking. And so at that point in time, years ago, I hired somebody to start looking. Now we have various people that are looking for us. And so the idea is that's one way to getting clients, and that's what we've been doing, and now we've successfully done it a couple of times. And James and me, but James has also been a part of the beginning of bringing in. He was the first advisor we were able to bring in. Now he's a partner. And then buying these books of business were very, very helpful, because now he has a lot of clients because of those.
I'm going to share something that I think you hit home really well, Ed, which is the average age of advisors. There's a Kitsie's article that came out about how they're having a supply problem with young advisors compared to how many, you know, are older. And so if you're listening to this and you're in your 20s, 30s, and you have a strong passion for this field, you're in a great spot. And it's just finding the right fit for you. And that's what we'll talk about today, is how we approach it.
Yeah, and you're spot on. I mean, the industry is somewhat representative of society in terms of demographics, right? And we've got all these people getting ready to retire from the, you know, the baby boomers and the, I guess now the Gen Xers. And you're in the same boat with the advisors, right? So the advisors are about the same age, and you've got a lot of advisors looking to retire. And honestly, I've done a couple of episodes on the podcast talking about that, in that it doesn't seem like it should be too complicated of a problem to solve, but it really is. And at the industry level, I get a lot of calls and emails from advisors who are getting towards the end of their career and looking to sell their practice, and they're not really sure what they want to do. When they look around, they don't really see what they like. And I'll kind of frame it, maybe overgeneralizing this a little bit, but in a lot of cases, advisors, they want to get top dollar for their practice. So they are going to sell to someone who can afford to write them the biggest check. But with that means you're selling to an organization much larger than you are, which means you're giving up total control, and you're going to, you know, be an employee of, if not by the letter of your contract, at least that's the way it's going to seem in your workout period and the transition, that you work for them, and you're going to have to play by their rules, and you're going to have to do things the way they say you're going to do it. Well, a lot of advisors that have been in business for 30, 40 years have kind of gotten used to being the man in charge of everything, and they don't like the idea of giving up that control. So the flip side that I run into a lot are people, advisors that come to me and they say, I want you to find me a successor. Go find me someone to take over my business, and it's a great deal. We're going to bring them in here, and they're going to work for me for 10 years, and I'm going to slowly transition the clients to them. And then, you know, at the end of this, they can buy me out for the rest of it. And here's the common sense, but it can fly under the radar on you, problem with that. If you go hire, if you're a billion-dollar firm and you hire a $50 million producer and you slowly peel off assets to give to them over time, they're not going to be able to afford to pay top dollar for your business at the end of that 5-10 years, because they don't have that kind of cash to do it. You know, you're not going to be able to buy a, you know, $3-5 million business off a $200,000 salary over 10 years. You just don't, the math doesn't math out. So finding some type of a hybrid solution there, everybody wants to find a young successor, but they want the big firm's paychecks, and there's usually a compromise in there. So the simple solution that I would be looking at if I were in the M&A space as a firm is to do kind of what I believe you've talked to me about what you're doing. You're buying the businesses, but then you're also hiring younger advisors to come in and groom to take on larger and larger roles over time, so that you can be the big firm check, but you're also bringing in advisors to come in, and you're using that as a way to leverage recruiting opportunities to make it more attractive to young advisors who have skills and abilities and talents that they're trying to cultivate, but they don't have enough clients to put them to use with. You're going out and getting the clients for them, and then giving them a home to come in and be able to practice what they've learned without having to go out and find their own clients all the time. And you're solving for the succession along the way.
Yeah, that's certainly, I think, one of the appealing things about what we're trying to do. And it's one piece. So what we're trying to do is bring in advisors that have some clients already. But let's face it, there's two types of advisors. There's the hunters, and then there's the financial planning advisors. And it's a completely different skill set. And some people are good at both. But the people who are actually good at the first, you could just be pedestrian. You could just be average. And you're still going to be successful. And there's just not that many people who are great at that, right? I mean, it goes back to Garrett. I don't know, you know, you and I are closer to the same age. Like, who loved the cold calling? How many people were awesome at cold calling? I don't care what industry you're talking about. It just isn't a skill set that people like or are very good at. So when you're not very good at it and you don't like it, there's very few people who are at it. So, you know, we're all competing against, you name the big investment company that has a bunch of advisors. You know, I'm going to name the one that I came from, which was Fidelity Investments. I started the company 20 years ago, but, you know, Fidelity Investments is a machine. You know, they have a great setup on how to bring in clients. So we can't compete with them in one way, but we can compete with them in another way is actually what we focus on are advisors who are great at the second piece. If you're great at the first piece and you're great at the second piece, that's awesome.
More power to you.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you're great at the first, at the second piece, we will work with you, which is what I did with James. He's actually really good at both. So, and since he's come aboard, it's played out the way that he and I had hoped, right? He had to trust me to a certain extent, and I'll let James kind of speak to that. But that's the idea, is that we're doing the heavy lifting on one side when it comes to trying to get some of these clients. But that's not the only way. You know, you don't want to go to anywhere going with a promise, and it's pretty rare. I don't know if I've even heard this, where a firm is actually like, yeah, we're doing M&A and we're buying clients. You just come over and we're going to give you clients and that's it. No, I mean, got to have some of your own clients. We also have a marketing person, as I mentioned in the other podcast, that is focusing on helping each advisor coming up with a marketing plan that's very specific for them. Now, it's in the context of the company and what we do, but our number one goal for the advisors that join us, one is they have to fit in well, right? But the number one goal is you have to be really focused and love doing financial planning. We are awesome at financial planning, and we expect every advisor to do a great job. That's why we require them all to have CFPs. And so everybody who is here has a CFP in that role if they're going to be focused on the financial planning. And we will then help and work with you to try to grow that book of business in all the different ways. And M&A is one of the ones.
So James, when you came over to Edge, and we can kind of talk about when, you know, at that time, or I'm sure it may have evolved a little bit over time as well, but you're looking for, I know that one thing that I know about you guys is that you're very, very focused on finding the right fit. And that's something that a lot of firms will say, we're looking for the right type of advisor. We're not just looking for anybody with a heartbeat. We're looking for the right type. But I know firsthand from chatting with you guys and talking with you quite a bit, and from just experience with folks that we've introduced and talked about over the last year or so, that it doesn't necessarily, I mean, the book matters, the business matters, the dollars and the cents matter, but really it comes down to personality for you. And if, is this the right fit? Is this someone who is going to fit in with our culture, that we're going to be able to cultivate and grow their career, and that they're going to be a good part of what we're doing here? So it's admirable that for a lot of firms that are out there that say, we're looking for the right fit, and really the right fit is an active CRD and at least $10 million under management or whatever it is that their minimum is. But for you, it really comes down to personality quite a bit as well. So James or Ed, I mean, what is that personality? What are those traits that you're looking for in the personality that, and just the character makeup, I suppose? What's the why behind that also? What do those attributes bring to the table for Edge and for the advisor?
Yeah, I'll kick it off and I'll let Ed add on. But, you know, I'll share a little bit about my story, and then it ties to the personality. Is, you know, when I was at TD Ameritrade, is where I came from before I joined Edge, is, you know, I realized I enjoyed helping clients. I actually found a lot of fulfillment for getting the money for a minute and solving for clients' financial planning needs. It gave me a lot of satisfaction into my value. The problem I ran into with TD Ameritrade is corporate culture and sales metrics and all of that aspect, which I didn't hate the sales component, but I just love sitting down with clients and helping them. And so that's when Ed and I got together, and he helped me solve for that of, look, we have these clients, bring some of the ones that like working with you over, and we'll grow it together. And so now fast forward to today, the personality types, as we're looking to expand and scale our practice, is those who care. I mean, I know it's a cliche answer, but those who really think about, you know, as news headlines comes out, as regulations change in the industry, they think about, which of my clients is this going to affect? I got to reach out and call them. I got to make sure they're in the know. I want them to perceive me as the be-all, end-all for their financial life, because I want to provide that financial well-being and helping them thrive financially, which is one of our themes at the company. And so, you know, being a master of your craft within financial planning, we get together as a team and talk through all that. So you're part of a team and making sure that we're all playing off each other. But showing who you are based on care, based on passion, passion sells more than you think it sells. You know, when you are passionate about a topic, clients feel it and they're more motivated than you might ever imagine. But going back to that gatherer, as Ed had mentioned, you know, that skill set, you're a problem solver for them. And we want to add advisors who think that same language instead of what product can I get them in for this and what how can I help do this for me? Focus on them. We promise it will circle back to you. I've seen it firsthand. And yeah, it's a really good dynamic here from that standpoint.
Yeah, when I first got into, well, I go back to when I was in college. I remember a good friend of mine who's still in the industry today was kind of, he was very influential in my decision to get into financial services in the first place. And I thought I wanted to be a financial advisor. And that's what I told everybody I was going to be when I got out of college. And then I started interviewing for jobs. And I learned that maybe I didn't want to be a financial advisor right away because I didn't really know what being a financial advisor was. I thought being a financial advisor was I go to work for a firm, I get a little bit of a salary, I go get some clients, they give me some clients, I make money based on my salary plus the ability to get new clients plus the ability to do a good job for the clients that I have. And if I'm successful with it, I'll get more clients and I'll make bigger bonuses and it'll be a great career. And then I started interviewing and I realized, no, there is no salary. It is 100% sales. And it's much less about how good of a job you do for those clients. And it's much more about how many of those clients you can get and how big of a commission you can get on the products that you sell them. And you're basically going to starve until you get to a point where you're thriving. And it's going to be this roller coaster ride emotionally, financially, and whatnot. And I said, I'm not ready for that. So I kind of paused it for a couple of years and I got a job in banking for a little bit. And I saved up a little bit before I started it. But man, the starting a career as a financial advisor 15, 20, 30 years ago, it was like pulling teeth, man. It was not a lot of fun. Now, there are a lot better opportunities out there. I worked with someone over the winter that is brand new college graduate and wanted to get into financial services, but didn't want to be 100% sales. And she ended up finding a nice job at a local firm, earning a salary as a peer planner that she can kind of grow and build into or grow into more of an advisor role over time. And those are much better paths. When you think about what the opportunity looks like for an advisor, you don't have to starve while you do a good job for these clients, while you're growing and you're continuing. You've got some type of an income coming in. You do have opportunities to participate in helping clients of the firm and getting compensated for helping other clients with the firm. And you do have growth potential. If you develop hunter skills and you become better at hunting and gathering, then you can grow and continue to have that upside. But that best of all worlds that I thought this industry was 20 years ago, it really wasn't. But now it is that. But advisors have to know where to find those. Those opportunities are still few and far between. I think there should be more opportunities like that. But it still circles back with a lot of firms to, yeah, we say we're planning focused, but we really mean go find more clients to plan for. That's what we are really focusing on. So I don't know if that's a question more than it is just commentary, but it sounds to me like that's what you guys are trying to build at Edge, is an opportunity for advisors to come in and have those three things: have stability while they grow their career, have opportunities to work with clients and be planning focused first rather than sales focused, but still not sacrificing growth potential and upside if you do end up being more successful at bringing in your own assets.
Look, we get it. We completely understand that, you know, if you're first starting off, you're going to look at your friends, you're going to look at your family, your neighbors, and trying to get a practice, and you might have 15 million and you've built up, but then what after that, right? I've kind of exhausted all my avenues. And so how do I get to that next chapter? That's what we've been able to solve for most recently. It's either through buying practices, right, to provide those advisors, or inorganic growth. You know, we have a nice funnel, I think, of a snowball, where we started off at the top and the ball was rolling a little bit. Now the ball's rolling a lot faster, where we're getting a lot more inorganic, organic growth through people coming in, people through referrals, and we need homes for them. And so we need to make sure that the advisor's right fit for our branding message that we never want to compromise, as we talked about before. But that's it's a really good spot for those that just, again, want to serve and help, be really good at what they do. There's a home here there.
This reminds me of you know, in our industry, the goal eventually, if you've been in the business for a while as a financial advisor, is to start having the minimums for your clients be bigger and bigger, right? Because we know that the 80-20 rule works in our industry very, very distinctly. It's the same as all industries. You know, James and I did this thing with, we custodian our assets at Fidelity and at Schwab. Fidelity has this great division. It's a practice management division where they provide a lot of resources. And one of them was, you could provide them all of your clients, and then you give them a summary of all your expenses and all the different ways, and they can tell you roughly about what every client costs. And I had done this on my own maybe like 6-8 years ago. And Fidelity did it for us maybe 2 years ago. And the average client, you know, for how comprehensive we are and how many people touch them and take care of them and all the software that we use to take care of them, the average client, it's between $4,000 and $7,000 a year, right? And that means that's to break even, like for a business like ours. That means you can't take on little clients. And it's the same thing in what we're doing when it comes to advisors. Meaning, just like you said, we want to bring in advisors that fit our model and also are okay with not taking on small clients, because we all think like taking on, you know, 5 smaller clients, well, I'm going to make more revenue. Well, it's a lot more work for everybody. But if you're the right fit, if you fit into what we're doing, you're going to be able to get, like you said, Garrett, like there are these places, these pockets. And I think Edge is one of them where we're going to be able to help you grow your book of business better than you probably can do it on your own, because we'll be able to give you clients. I mean, this last book of business we bought was just, I think I told you, Garrett, like it was 4 or 5 months ago. And James and I took on all the clients. James took more of them. I took some of them. And we were like, man, we're like getting kind of full, you know, like it's getting a little bit. So we brought in some other younger advisors who both have their CFP. One got his CFP while he was here and the other one had a CFP. And they're working hand in hand with James and me. And the goal is now over the next couple few years is for them to get some clients as we bring in new clients, some of our other clients we take care of. And the idea would be if other advisors join us, they're going to be in the queue, just like James originally was. And James, this might be a good place for you to kind of talk about how you and I talked about that and what my hope for you was when you came in. Just like you know, you were able to bring in some clients, but you know, what has happened since? That's been 5 years ago. What's kind of happened since, and how have you gotten to where you've gotten?
Yeah, certainly. So I started off by bringing in my existing clients from those relationships at TD Ameritrade. And to your point, Ed, I mean, I was talking to you, very excited. I got this guy, he's got $200,000 and I can help him in these ways. And Ed told me, he says, James, I don't want to take anything away from that client. You don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish. You know, you want to envision yourself, have a 5-year goal for you. What is the ideal client for you? What do they look like? What problems do they have, and how much do they have to work with, right? So the how much is important. It shouldn't be the only thing, but the problem that I ran into is I wanted to help everybody. I was almost too eager, and Ed helped educate me, realize, all right, if I want to grow this healthy practice, I have to be very careful on who I'm taking, right? And it's a marriage, right? We start off dating when we're talking, and then we decide, are we going to get married or not? And this is going to be my career path for the next 25 years of my life. And so who do I want to be working with, both from a monetary and personality standpoint, where I have a fulfilling day-to-day life? I'm talking to these people all day long, right? And so, you know, since then we bought a practice during COVID times, and I was able to establish those relationships and learn about them. And again, that's where I go back to that snowball. I started to see, okay, I've got a network. This is like my second family, right? And so how do I make sure that they're not just clients of ours, but they are advocates of ours? And that was my focus. I want to create advocates for the firm so they feel good bragging about us. They feel good talking about us in the Thanksgiving dinner table. And so that's where the referral network came in at that time. And then since then, we realized, okay, now we're adding a lot more clients. We need to make sure that we have a staff and a team to support those clients. And so, as Ed had mentioned, we added on a couple associate advisors. And as I'm growing, my goal is to go up market, right? And be able to help more in a more profound way within the skills that I've been able to obtain over the last 5 years. Meanwhile, the associate advisors, they're eager, they're ready to go. They obtain their CFP. Now they're receiving clients of mine. That's why we talk about you don't need to be a salesperson here. As this funnel keeps going, there's a handoff, right? That associate advisor role or an advisor working with someone else getting started is one of the most phenomenal roles, in my opinion. If I could go back when I was 22 years old and do that, that's the first thing I would do. You're learning on the job. You're experiencing the clients in person. You're in all the meetings. You're establishing relationships without the pressure of having to do anything quite yet. So you're groomed along the way, and then the clients are handed off to you. And that's, we're trying to keep that train going, and that's our goal.
I want to shift a little bit in the time we got left here. I want to talk a little bit about the M&A side, because it's funny. I had a conversation with a guy probably a year ago, another gentleman in the industry that does similar type work to what I do. And really, recruiting and M&A are somewhat two sides of the same coin in some ways. When you recruit a new advisor and they bring business with them, then that is some form of acquiring assets. So you can look at them as the same thing, but most people understand it's two very different practices, really. When you're recruiting advisors, you're looking to bring advisors in, have them bring their books of business with them, and that gets absorbed into your practice. M&A is when you're writing a check and you're buying the business of someone else, and they're not sticking around long term, but there is going to be some type of transition period there. And even there, though, it does still kind of blend back together, because it's not just you write a check and then it's done. You still have to work together for 6 months to 5 years, depending on the transition and how it's framed out. So there's still a need for that right personality fit to some extent, even when you're looking at M&A. It's not maybe... You're not going to be married to them as long as you might for an advisor that you're recruiting, but at the same time, you don't want to do business with people that are on opposite sides of the fence as you when it comes to just the way you see the business, the way you want to do things. So when you are looking for businesses to acquire, what are some of those things that you're looking for? What's the profile of the types of businesses you're looking for?
Well, there's a couple big ones, and James, you can add too, but the first couple that come to my mind is they've got to have somewhat similar, like a majority of the clients have to be somewhat similar to our type of clients. Not in the exact same industry. Like, we just purchased a book of business from a gentleman who is Jewish, and a lot of his clients are Jewish, and neither one of us are Jewish. And so he had kind of this concern, and it hasn't been a concern at all. And the reason is because it doesn't matter what you are, what color your skin is. It doesn't matter what your background is. If you do a great job, then that's what the clients want. And I would say that has gone over very, very well. Both James and I have gotten a lot of really good feedback. He was a really good advisor. He was, around 70, and he was like ready to kind of... So we picked up, and I think we're able to even do a couple things, as well. And we've added a couple things. And so I think people have been very, very happy with that. So that's one key piece. And then the other key piece is these clients have to kind of fit the profile from a financial perspective. We're not just going to buy a book of business for a bunch of people that generate small amounts of revenue, because it's just not going to make, the math just doesn't work, right? So those are a couple that come to my mind. James, do you have anything else?
I think those are perfect. The other one that comes to my mind is similar investment philosophy, right? And that's... There's nuance to that, of course, but I'll use the extreme example. If you want to be an active trader for your clients and you love, going back and forth in the markets, it's just not a fit for us, because we lead with planning. Now, you don't have to do massive planning on your end. We ideally want the existing advisor to do some planning, because then we can pick up where they left off and not have to start from scratch. But on the investment philosophy side is, do we believe in the long-term growth of the markets, and asset allocation is important, and having the right mix of stocks and bonds and alternatives and things of that nature? That is going to be important to allow them to seamlessly transition over. And it's really more so for the client, because if they're used to one way of business and all of a sudden it's shifting on the investment side, they're probably not going to like that, let alone our operations. So that's the probably the other piece worth mentioning on that front.
Ed and James, really appreciate you guys taking the time to chat with me about this today. And I will plug the Ed's Edge podcast on the Wealth Partners Network. So I'm going to shamelessly self-promote the network as well there. So check out the Ed's Edge podcast. It's on Spotify, Apple, about a dozen different podcast outlets. It's also on YouTube, on the Ed's Edge, or the Edge FA YouTube channel, or the Wealth Partners YouTube channel. I'll put some links to all this kind of stuff in the description, wherever you're watching or listening to this. And if you are an advisor that's in that Chicago, Wheaton, Illinois area that is interested in potentially selling your business and you're looking for the right fit, Ed and James and the whole team are a great group, and they do really high quality work. I do admire from the other podcasts we've done and seeing what you guys, how in depth you get. You do high quality work for clients, and also for younger advisors who are maybe sick of the have to hunt to meet next month's sales goal lifestyle. They do have a great alternative to help you grow up in your career and prosper financially as well as professionally. So feel free to reach out to me at Garrett@theadvisoradvocates.com or give me a call, 919-561-2436. Head to edgefa.com to do more of your own research. And I do encourage you, you've got, 54 episodes of the Ed's Edge podcast now. So you want to learn more about these guys and see what they're all about. They've got 50, I don't know how many hours that turns out to, probably 25 hours worth of videos and podcasts they can check out to get to know your approach a little bit better. And so I love that about the podcast, because when you do a podcast, you put yourself out to the world. Anybody who wants to know what you're all about, they can really get to know you by just spending a little bit of time. That's you. And the cool thing about you guys is I've talked to, we're not recording every single conversation we have together, right? But I don't necessarily notice the difference between whether the red light's on or not when I'm talking to you guys. You're the same whether we're recording a podcast or just talking. So I always admire that and look for that in the people that I work with, is just be genuine, be who you are. And that's the cool thing about you guys. I know what you see is what you get. So really appreciate that about you.
Yeah, thanks, Garrett.
Appreciate it.
We appreciate you having us on. The only one other caveat I would just add to that is we actually just had an advisor. He's joining us soon in a couple months, and he's 60, and he has his own book of business. And what he did was he just wanted to find a place. He was on his own, but he wanted to find a place, and he's not sure. He's going to at least work for 5 to 10 more years, find a place that'd be a good fit where eventually he could kind of roll it off in the sunset, but it's not anything imminent. So we're even open to, advisors who are looking just for a better home, no matter how, if they're here planning on doing it for really long or just for a little while. So it's just got to be the right fit, as we mentioned, for us.
Yeah. And I think, when I end these podcasts, a lot of times I'll kind of, if you're an advisor who blah, 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 and then you kind of create a profile. But really, the most successful firms that I've worked with at growing their practice all say the same thing, which is we're less worried about these black and white boxes that have to be checked and more interested in the personality. If it's the right personality, if it's the right fit culturally, if they're our kind of people, ever how you want to say that, it could be a 48-year-old with a $50 million business, or it could be a 65-year-old with a $30 million business, or it could be a 25-year-old with an $8 million business. If it's the right personality, we'll figure out a way to make that work if it's something that makes sense, as opposed to saying these are the absolute account minimums and these are the absolute minimums for the dollars and cents side of things. The more rigid you are on those things, the harder it can be. But I know you're looking for a few good men and women more than you are the what the accounts look like. So
yep,
always appreciate that too. Cool, guys. Well, enjoy your weekends. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Garrett.
Hey, guys.
Thank you for watching or listening to the Advisor Advocates podcast. Really appreciate it. If I can't help you in any way, please feel free to give me a call at 919-561-2436 or send me an email at Garrett@theadvisoradvocates.com, or feel free to use my calendar link, which will be listed in the description below. Thanks again for your time. See you next time.